to another episode of the Main Quest podcast. This is, of course, the number one retro gaming podcast with more hatred for pirates than Nintendo. As always, I am your host, Keith. Hi. Hello. I just never say, hey, how's it going? How you doing? When's the last time you had a peanut butter sandwich? I just got off a call with B. Ross from Super Garbage Day talking about Revenge of Shinobi here. And we'll get to that in a minute. But first, I have some people to thank for keeping this show alive. And that is the dear, dear patrons here over at the Main Quest podcast Patreon. I don't know why I'm laughing. It's just, I think it's just awkward. I'm not used to doing this yet. I'm not used to these patron shoutouts. It's wild to me that people are paying me money to do this now, but here we are. And if this is something you would like to do, if this is a show that you would like to support, like many others are right now, you can head over to patreon.com/themainquest. And of course, that can be found in the show notes as well, gift wrapped with a whole bunch of other links within that Linktree link that you see there. We can also access where you can find the show on social media. And another way to support the show is through buying some merch. So, you know, you can buy yourself a sticker or a shirt, something a little more valuable, I would say, than a Patreon, because you get something physical in return for the money that you get. So, but no matter what I fucking think my money is worth, these special patrons get a shout out here. And I think today, for today's theme, for Revenge of Shinobi, I'm going to give these patrons what they are getting revenge for. They have been done wrong by somebody, somehow, and they're out for revenge. And so our first patron here is Eric Guess. What is Eric getting revenge for? My mind goes straight to cheating. It goes straight to cheating, because I feel like the most basic form of revenge is when somebody's been like cheated on. I don't know why my mind is going there immediately. So Eric, you are getting revenge on a furry for kidnapping your dogs. They are a special community. I'm not saying they're all stealing dogs out there, but I bet some of them have. And I don't want to know what they're doing with those dogs, but the implication is incredibly serious. And so the next patron here is Zero Sam. And they are getting revenge on the 7-Eleven clerk who rang them up for one too many G Fuels. And I know the story. You only bought two. You only bought two G Fuel. I don't know why you would ever need to. You bought two, and they rang you up for like six. So, slaughtering time, baby. The next patron, Kayla Jackson. And Kayla is getting revenge on the person who stood next to her in the mosh pit and farted. Listeners, I'm telling you, as somebody who has been in a mosh pit or two, there's nothing worse than sitting in a concert and there's an overwhelming waft of fart that fills the air. And it could have come from anybody. It might have been me. Sometimes you just get kicked in the stomach and gases come out. It happens. And the next patron, Ryan, player one. Ryan, let me tell you, he is getting revenge because somebody has sent him one too many Yoshi feet pics. It's time to track him down. The one with the Yoshi egg yolk all over his feet and toes. That was the one to send him over the edge. Next is Ashton. Ashton is getting revenge on a event organizer, event coordinator, who promised that Ashton was going to take place in a cream pie eating contest, and found out that all of his cream pies were actually filled with mayonnaise. Thus, he lost the contest. And Dave Jackson, finally the final patron here, is getting revenge on the person who sold them a copy of Limp Bizkit's $3 Bill Y'all on Craigslist. Very nice album. And instead, when he received it, it was introspective by the Pet Shop Boys instead. It was not what he wanted. maybe a come-up, depending on who you are? I'm not really sure. Either way, he's taking revenge. It's not what he wanted. And those are the patron shoutouts for this week. Thank you guys so much for supporting the show. It really does mean a lot. And if you are supporting the show in other ways, hey, thank you too. You guys are just as important as anybody else. These guys just, for whatever reason, want to throw money at me to have their names shouted out here. So here we are. And so now on to the show proper. Again, I had B. Ross on from Super Garbage Day. And man, it was a lot of fun. It really was. The dude is hilarious. He has such a passion for video games. And, you know, I haven't been listening to Super Garbage Day for long. They haven't been around for very long, as we'll kind of discuss in the episode in the next couple minutes. But I'm very particular about the podcasts that I listen to. It's very hard for me to get into a podcast. And I usually give just about everyone I come across a shot, you know? And most of them don't stick with me. And Super Garbage Day sticks with me. I mean, him and Mr. Miller are hilarious. They play off of each other very well. And they cover a lot of games that most people don't really talk about. And so that's something that I really connect with, because that's what I do on this show, you know? So it's kind of like my show, but better. I really like what they do over there. And if you guys like this show for what it is, I think you guys will really appreciate what they're doing over there. So yeah, it was a good time. It was a lot of fun recording this episode with him. So I hope you guys like it just as much as I do. So enjoy this talk about Revenge of Shinobi. Saw like these big banners on Redbubble, and I initially got that because I was going to stream, so I was like, oh, this would be a dope ass background to have while I stream. And streaming isn't my thing. I found out very quickly that I was like, I'm in way over my head. There's too much of a learning curve, and I just don't have the time or the patience.
Yeah, it takes a lot more effort, I think, because you have to have a captive audience. And you have to build that. It's hard to build that. Like with a podcast, you start off with maybe a couple people. And then if you have a big enough library, people down the road can go back, look back on that. But that doesn't really happen with streaming, right? So something outrageous happens. You have to capture it and highlight or something. It's just too much. Too many moving parts for me.
Yeah. I mean, well, you guys stream your stuff, right?
Oh, what? I used to stream just like you. And then I realized I use Twitch and YouTube as like a alternative stream of attention. So I'll do like I'll stream the first play, like me playing the game for the first time, like 20 minutes or sometimes an hour at the most. I don't care if people come in, because I just use that footage and export it directly to YouTube so that I just have the Super Garbage Day everywhere, you know? And it kind of helps with SEO. And also I do get some of the patrons and some of the people in my Discord come in and talk to me when I'm doing that. So I think it's good for engagement as well.
I always feel like guilty too, because when, I tried streaming, the guilt came from the fact that I don't really watch anybody else on Twitch or anything like that. So I was just like, well, who the fuck am I to be like, hey, come watch me stream. But then I just don't go watch other people stream, because that's just not the type of person. I just don't sit around and watch other people play video games.
No.
I have periodically, but it's very, very rare.
I'm kind of in the same camp with you on that. I don't I don't have like the time. I'm like a single father too. And it's like, already everything is really thin, but like, you know, like I said, streaming is the only way I use it is for that another stream of no pun intended, but of for people to find us. And I don't know, I think some of the Discord and some of my community gets a kick out of it. Just they'll watch it, you know. It doesn't, I'm not looking to make either of those things really the biggest deal. I'd rather just have the podcast downloads.
I do think it's cool though, because that way that's a direct way for people to interact with you then and there. Whereas listening to a podcast, you can't do that. Unless you're on a Discord server, and then you can, you know, throw your thoughts out there. But
I'm just discovering Discord myself. I was aware of it for a while, but now I'm realizing it's kind of interrupting, you know, like, if a lot of people, and you want to give everybody that listens or cares about your show, like, you want to, you know, at least talk to them. But I'm realizing some of these shows, I join their Discords and there's like thousands of people and it's blowing up. Yes. It's blowing up my phone. And I'm like, fuck this, dude. I just like, I like the shows, but I can't take the Discords too much.
It's a lot to keep up with in some communities. Yeah. Yeah. It's too much sometimes. Speaking of Discord servers, do not feel the pressure to participate in mine, because I'm literally just using it to record. Because
I didn't know you had one till right now. So no worries.
Don't feel any pressure to participate, because nobody will be. It's just for recording. I'm in the same boat as you. I've got kids. I'm doing the podcast. I'm playing the games and stuff. I just don't have time.
Yeah.
To run a Discord server. So
I feel you. I try. I hope that it just stays the way it is. I like the small collection of people that are in there.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. And I like, I just kind of like poking around in different retro gaming communities and see what other people are playing. Maybe we can talk about that a little bit more as I get into some of these questions with you. Which, by the way, I mean, if you're ready to start, we can just go at it.
Let's roll. I'm always ready.
All right. I mean, at this point, you've already been listening to them, and I'm really excited to get into today's episode, and I'm excited about my guest. He is Bassin's Black Bass Bassin World Champion, and he is not Hank Parker. I'm gonna do you one better here, guys. It is B Ross from Super Garbage Day Podcast. What's going on, man?
Keith, it's such a pleasure to be here. Big fan of your show, and that's back to back Black Bassin's Black Bass Championship. 94-95 Bass Extravaganza.
That is a little behind the scenes. I think you put that in for Listener Request Month, and I had no idea what the fuck that game was when you submitted it. I'm like, what the hell is this? And then I started listening to more episodes on your podcast, and it's just kind of like a running gag on your show.
It is, yeah. It's kind of both, though. Like, I actually do really love that game, and it is one of my top 10 favorite Super Nintendo games. But the running joke is that it's a bass fishing game that I'm just like overstating, you know, and like selling it too hard. But it is now in that pool, so it might get picked, and there might be a day that there's a episode on it, which I'm crossing my fingers, because we don't pick our games.
I'm guessing, just by your name, B Ross, that the B stands for Bassin.
Correct. Yeah. And Bassin,
that's what I thought.
Bassin is a verb, so you know.
But tell us about Super Garbage Day. You know, how did you kind of started talking about it prior to recording, but how did you and Mr. Miller hook up? You know, what made you guys want to do a retro gaming podcast?
Well, I have a history in podcasting and multimedia design. I went to college I have a degree in multimedia design, and I've tried every outlet of flexing that or those skills, and I found that podcasting was the most comfortable for me. And so a while back, I started a show in 2015 called Life Bites. That was kind of a random show that I tried to find. I had a co-host as well. It wasn't Mr. Miller, but back then we would try to find the craziest things we could on the internet and then do an episode every week on it. And it was fun, but it kind of petered out. It became difficult because I had to move to New York and come back to the West Coast. I kept flying between New York and Oregon. And eventually I thought, man, I want to get back into podcasting. So here's the crazy idea. Here's a short story long. I became a garbage man, and all I would do was listen to retro podcasts, because I'm a collector. I just love retro games. I'm a child of the 80s. And I came up with this crazy idea to record a podcast while I did my garbage route. That was going to be about just how weird the small town I worked in was and all the little dramas. And my boss found out that I was going to do that. I had the art made, which is our logo. And he said, you absolutely are not going to be doing that while you're driving that heavy machinery. So I already had all the promotion made for this Garbage Man podcast. And then I hit up, you know what? I said, fuck it. I want to do a retro video game podcast, and I want it to be random. And I took bits and pieces of shows I loved, and I kind of Frankensteined a show together. And then I literally went online onto my social media and said, do any of my friends that live locally want to be on my retro podcast show? And Ryan Miller That's his full name, Mr. Miller.
I feel like I gotta bleep that.
You don't. We already said, I think two episodes ago, we said our full names for no fucking reason. But he said me, and I was like, that is my dude, because I've known him for a long time. He's been a great guy, a good friend. He's very reliable, and he has been. So every week now, for the past 23 weeks, we've been recording an episode of Super Garbage Day where we pick a random game, or a random game picks us, that we haven't played, that's 20 years or older, and that's usually obscure, and we attempt to either beat it or give it, you know, the time of day, and then we come back every week and give you our review. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, I know we just kind of both found each other randomly through Instagram, which is kind of how a lot of my interactions start with a lot of the community that I've interacted, indie gaming podcasting community that I've interacted with. And yeah, you guys both have a great rapport. The thing that I was going to say earlier that I really enjoy about your show is that you guys, because you choose games at random, you guys talk about some really obscure titles that a lot of other retro gaming podcasts do not cover, because it's easy to just pick the bangers, right?
About them. The low-hanging fruit of getting views or listens.
Right. Right. Whereas I think it's a lot more interesting to talk about the games that people aren't talking about, you know? So yeah, it's a great show. If you guys are listening to this, you guys are fans of The Main Quest, you're definitely going to like B. Ross and Mr. Miller are doing over at Super Garbage Day. I mean, it's a really good time. It's a lot of fun. You guys actually made me change one of my sound effects that I had planned for a Patreon show. Because when you guys spin the wheel, you have the Vampire Survivors wheel spin.
Oh, it's such a good sound effect for that. It's such a good effect. So good. It's so clutch.
And I have a movie podcast on my Patreon where we pick a new movie at random. And I was going to use that sound effect, but as of the time of this recording, that stuff hasn't aired yet. And when I heard your guys' podcast, I was like, shit, I can't use it now.
Oh, you can't. It's not like I composed the song. I mean, it's...
No, I know. But I'm like, man, no. So I changed it. I wouldn't have been happy with myself.
But still.
You guys own that now. Fuck Vampire Survivors. That's your song.
Appreciate that. That means a lot to us. So I'm just hoping we don't get sued.
As far as video games go, you know, how far back does that go for you? Like, what are, I guess, some of your most formative experiences with it?
I recall playing a vampire typing adventure game, I think, on the Intellivision called Dracula's Castle. I mean, that is the literal first memory of video games I had. My uncle was into tech back then. Of course, you know, what tech, late 70s, early 80s tech. That game for some reason freaked me out. I was a kid. I was just learning how to like read and write. And I remember typing that, and it was a black screen with white text telling me like, do you want to go to this crypt or do you want to go left or right? And I was like scared. And that was my first video game experience. And then after that came the Nintendo, and then came the Genesis. Those two were pretty landmark in my childhood, because I was there at the height of their popularity during the console wars. So I was totally that consumer that was having to decide between the two companies, and I ended up with both systems. Actually, I think my father traded the Nintendo to get the Genesis. But I mean, technically I owned both, just not at the same time. And so that's from there. I mean, the rest is history, because by the time I was in the 90s, I was an older kid. And then, you know, I had every system you could think of. I had a Sega CD. That's what I wanted for Christmas. I had the 64 when it came out. I got the PS1. I bought the Dreamcast at launch. That's one of my favorite systems, by the way. It's so underrated.
Absolutely.
And since then, you know, like, I think it kind of petered off. I stopped really caring around the 360. I think that's, life just became too much adult. You know, there's so much stuff to take care of. There was no bandwidth to play games. And also games started getting like just purely online competitive. And I felt like I was so old and I could not keep up, even if I practiced. And so that's kind of right around that area is when I started kind of collecting retro and getting into retro. So that's a timeline of where I'm at now. You know, I just love that era from like 15 years ago and back. And I'd like to be a part of the community that helps preserve it. And I think you're a big part of that too. So kudos to you for the work you put in.
Appreciate
Artie Lightfoot was hilarious. I was actually laughing out loud at some point. So.
Oh, thanks. It's interesting because I used to ask the question to a first time guest, if there was any point in their life that they have dropped off of video games. And you're kind of the first one that has said that, because that kind of happened to me, too. A little bit later, I would say towards the end of the 360 era, was like you. I wasn't a big online multiplayer person, still not very much. And the single player games just weren't doing it for me that much. They all just kind of seemed kind of the same. Yeah, man. So now that you're kind of playing games more often, are you at all interested in anything that's coming out recently? Or are you just specifically playing retro games?
Actually, thanks to the Steam Deck, I've fallen back in love with current gen gaming. Because that was a purchase I made earlier this year. I waited, to see if everything was going to be okay. Because I'm always nervous about new consoles, especially things from Valve. You know, they had not the best track record.
How long is this going to be supported?
Yeah, I thought like, oh, the Steam boxes didn't do good and the oof. But no, it was a good purchase. If you have the extra income and you love video games, I highly recommend it. Because of that, now I've been able to play newer games or games that I may have missed out on in the last 10 years. And because of that, like I'm playing currently right now, like Days Gone, which at first I didn't really like it first, but now I really like it. It's one of those games where you're like, and then you're like, oh, no, I'm addicted. Great.
Yeah, you got to let it cook for a minute.
You do. Vampire Survivors. I love that silly, stupid ass game. And Subnautica, I just find myself like the accessibility to it allowed me to like, not only play the games like on my TV, but then grab it and hold it or play them with my children. We all played Death Road to Canada together. And the Steam Deck, I feel like I'm doing a plug right now. I am not sponsored. I fucking wish. But that thing will take any controller you throw at it. So just a heads up, it'll work with 360 controllers. So I don't know. It just relit this love of getting back into video games. Right now I'm kind of at a harmony, a nirvana of being able to play old games and love them and then like try out new ones as long as my bank account allots that. So so that's where I'm at right now.
And so the final question I have for you is, what is your favorite game of all time?
I thought hard. I always think about this question, and it's always kind of a moving target. Not because a game comes along today and will dethrone, but it's because I forget about games that were super dear to me, and something will remind me how much I loved that experience. But I always go back to Ultima Online. Something about I can't, and what breaks my heart is you can't play it again like the way it was in 1999. Massive multiplayer online game called Ultima Online was so fucking good. It was such a different, surreal experience online. I can't even describe it, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to be doing my own little bonus episode on that game and my experience with it. But it's like there's categories, like what's your favorite sports game? Bass is Block Bass. What's your favorite, Ultima Online is still up there with experience and just like a part of my history and my love. Like, I don't think I've loved a game more than I love that game. But other than that, I'd probably say Earthbound. also have a pretty strong connection with that game.
Both games have not been brought up on the show before, so
Earthbound hasn't been brought up on the main quest.
Oh man, as somebody's favorite game, I don't think so.
I'm surprised. That's seems like a perfect game to fit for your show.
I mean, it'll be an episode in the future, like 3 years from now or something, whenever I get to the Super Nintendo. But
that's how it works.
As far as guests go, I haven't heard Ultima Online either, and I think does that predate World of Warcraft, or is it around the same time?
It does, like right before it. World of Warcraft actually fucked all that up because they came out with this newer kind of way of playing online games, and then nobody went the path development wise that Ultima did, so that it died. Yeah, but it was like right before. So
yeah,
it was the grandfather, or one of them. That and EverQuest.
I am a little surprised that you did not say the game in question, because, let's just kind of segue into our personal history with Revenge of Shinobi.
Absolutely.
I know you have a personal history with this game. You've talked about it on your show. So before I let you gush, I'm just going to very quickly go over mine because it's not really that interesting, to be honest. But my childhood friend, Max, I've brought this guy up on the show probably like 40 times already. He owned Revenge of Shinobi, not the Shinobi, although a Shinobi's just a ninja. That's neither here nor there. So this is something I just brought up on my episode for Mortal Kombat, is that we were just super into kung fu movies and just kind of like Japanese culture in general. In fact, I think his brother was the one that his older brother introduced me to anime, which is to say that I was watching and playing a lot of stuff that was not really conducive to the development of like a 10-year-old. Because like when you look at those early animes, like that stuff like back in the day was like 60% action and story. And then like the other 40% were just like random sex scenes for some reason.
Oh, you're so. Talking like the 80s, like late 80s animes that were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just real sketchy stuff that a 10-year-old should not be watching. But I mean, man, there was a ton of blood and a lot of action in those movies. So fuck it. Like, it was cool. But I mean, Revenge of Shinobi, that's what we're talking about, right? That entire game, even coming back to it for the show, was just a huge nostalgia trip for me. Like, even watching that opening cinematic when the game starts and he's got the sword and he's like deflecting the shurikens off of it and stuff, just brought me back to just sitting on the floor in his bedroom in front of the TV, knowing full well we were going to have a very bad time. We're gonna have a really long, frustrating afternoon playing that thing.
Indeed.
I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. It's hard as dog's dick. I don't think back in the day I even got past maybe like the third stage or something. I haven't beaten it until I played it for this very show. So yeah, man, we played it a lot. I took it home with me, and when I couldn't borrow it, I rented it. And yeah, this was, I just remember this being the Genesis game to play. Like, this is the one that you would want if you had a Genesis back then. Well, at least until Sonic showed up, but I think everybody knows how I feel about Sonic nowadays. But yeah, that's pretty much it. So what about you, man? What's your history with Revenge of Shinobi?
I've stated on my show that I believe it is technically the first 16-bit game I played, because I recalled, like I said earlier, having the Nintendo first, and then I believe my dad traded that to, and we had a used Genesis Model 1, you know, the big one. Yeah. And I still have it, actually, which was kind of cool playing Revenge of Shinobi on it. This game was like the first game I played that felt like that. I was like, there's nothing ever going to look better than this, man. Like, you know, that, like, there's, oh, it's the best. You know, like, it blew my mind. This, I received this and Altered Beast. Those were the two first games. I didn't even get to Altered Beast until like way later on, because I was so obsessed with this game. And I remember even replaying it now, just that something about that first screen, like you said, it totally gives that 80s ninja film kind of,
for sure,
swag going on. And I too was obsessed with Jackie Chan. I would say you're obsessed with Jackie Chan films, but I too was obsessed with like anime and kung fu films, and Jackie Chan being like my biggest, I was the hugest, still am, giant fan of him. So there's always this like this culture of like ninja, especially like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So it was just very, very,
oh yeah,
80s were all ninja, right? And this game, like, I didn't even realize that I was already playing one of the best ninja games of that era. And I remember just being absolutely frustrated by this game when I was a child. But of course, you have all the time in the day to sit there and restart. And the option menu is pretty, it's nice. You know, it gives you some options to start off with a lot more everything. So I loved this game. And I recalled being wowed. I don't want to give too much away because I know there's more to talk about. But I remember there's just certain parts of this game where I'm like, you got to be kidding me. This is in the game, you know, as a kid. So
yeah,
that's my history with it. It was the first 16-bit game I ever played.
That whole intro to the game is just so fucking cool. It's still fucking cool. Like, I don't care. Just the lightning flashing and you just see the silhouette of the ninja. Obviously, it's not like a high fidelity 4K render of an actual human being, but the titular shinobi that shows up on the screen looks really damn good for a 16-bit game.
I'd argue that would hold up today on like an indie game. somebody.
Absolutely.
That screen is bitching. And like he deflects the ninja stars. You see him even turning the hilt sideways.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
They were flexing on Nintendo, dude. They were yes, big they were. Time right there. They're like, check this shit out.
Stake right through the fucking heart.
Yeah, man.
Honestly, this should have been the pack-in instead of Altered Beast. I don't know what the hell was going on.
That's probably just red tape behind the scenes handshake stuff.
But why was Altered Beast the pack-in and not this? Well, let's talk about the development history, which I have no answer for that, honestly. That was just a really bad segue. The Revenge of Shinobi, or The Super Shinobi, in Japan, is a side-scrolling action platformer developed and published by Sega. And the development history of this game is pretty cut and dry. The original Shinobi was developed by Sega AM1, and it was released in the arcades, and then it was ported to the Master System. The arcade, apparently, was like a really big hit. Like, it was a critical hit here in the US, and it was pretty well received overseas from my understanding, and then eventually they greenlit a sequel, but it's not directly related to the series, which was called Shadow Dancer, and that came out 7 months prior to Revenge of Shinobi, which makes this game technically the third game in the series, but it is the direct follow-up to the first game. A little confused, like, it's Shadow Dancer's technically a spinoff, but also it's not. I don't know.
It's kind of Zelda-y, you know? Like, well, this one's related to this one, but not that one. But the timeline is this way. Like, it's...
Have you played either Shinobi or Shadow Dancer?
I have played Shadow Dancer. I have not played the arcade Shinobi. I really want to, but yeah, I've only played Shadow Dancer.
Okay. Yeah, I don't have any experience with either one of those. I just...
Oh, I was just going to say, it's solid.
Oh, okay. Yeah, just from doing my research or whatever and kind of looking at what those games were, I was like, yeah, okay, I've got some sort of understanding of what they were, but I've never checked them out. I'm not sure I want to. Who knows? There's a lot of games to play. So Revenge of Shinobi was created by Noriyoshi Oba, who basically realized that arcade games, the way arcade games were designed and how people interacted with them was very different from how they would play games at home. And this is something I've talked about on the podcast plenty of times when I was covering arcade ports of Nintendo games, because those conversions, though they, for the most part, sold very well, you know, because people wanted to play arcade games at home, it's not exactly, not only on a technical level is it the same as the games that you would play in the arcade, but also they're just not as fun. You don't have that real sense of community unless you have like a friend with you that would always just come over to your house, or you would go over to their house and just knock out, I don't know, fucking Rampage or something for an hour or two. The replayability was totally different than it was in the arcades. I don't know if that would be something you would agree with me on. I have no idea if you listen to any of my older episodes on some of those NES arcade ports.
I do recall you hating Sonic, but as far as the arcade versus home, I agree and disagree. I think it's because there was an era with the fighting game boom that is sacred and far better on the arcades than the home console versions. But I would agree with Nintendo ports, definitely a lot better just to sit at your house with your homies than try to go play a completely different version, to be honest, because that's a massive you know, downgrade from an arcade to an NES, so, but it's right, easier right. for you to accessible, so I agree.
I mean, I they got there, right? You know, as technology became cheaper and they were able to make these consoles more powerful, like, eventually, yeah, you get Street Fighter 2, and then you, like, the 17 versions of that, and, you know, Mortal Kombat and stuff like that, but specifically, like, Sega, you know, Altered Beast, arcade game, Golden Axe, arcade game, eventually came to the Genesis, and they were looking at those directly, and they wanted to make a game that I guess was for the people that pay to have console exclusive video games. And Oba wanted Revenge of Shinobi to have like this sense of balance between the two, because, you know, as I said, this game is very hard, so there is a challenge here, but it doesn't seem so insurmountable because Revenge of Shinobi kind of gives you a relatively nice toolbox to work with, and it's actually very easy to get through the game if you know what you're up against, if you know what you're doing.
I think it's fair, and I think its difficulty, it's perfectly paced, in my opinion. I'd almost compare it to, and people are not going to agree with this, but I would almost compare it to Battletoads, where you feel overwhelmed at first, and then with enough trial and error, you start to get really good at it.
Yeah, I was going to, I might bring that back up later, because you are far more versed in the tough-as-nails, NES-hard type games. We've talked about Battletoads off-air. Yes.
Yeah, that's a motherfucker.
Yes, it certainly is. And you mentioned the options menu earlier, and I think that's relevant because you can set the difficulty, right? And you can set the number of shurikens that you can carry, right?
Yep, and your control scheme, you can actually put which way, what do you want the three buttons to represent? So whatever's most comfortable for your hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you want to get the whole claw grip controller thing going, more power to you.
I don't know how people do that. How do people do that? I've watched Mr. Miller do that, and I'm like, what is this?
I've never tried it with retro games. There's only one game that I've tried it on, and I'm actually really successful at it. It's a modern game, Hades.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about that game, but I can just like set it in my lap and do weird. Looks like I got arthritis in my fucking fingers, but it works. I've never tried. Never in my life tried it on a retro game. I don't know. I think I'm too scared. I'm not very good at video games.
Well, I don't know. It seems you have beaten a quite a library of them so far on your series. So,
yeah, I suppose so. I did read an interview from 2003 with Oba that just kind of going back to the arcade games, but he noticed that, you know, that most people in arcades would only see about 3 minutes of gameplay. They almost always wouldn't see anything more than that. So with Revenge of Shinobi, he wanted the player to be able to see the entire game, but also challenge them, right? And so in the same interview, he also mentioned the shuriken system and the power-ups as sort of like a hierarchy of tools that you needed to use to succeed. So like I think he said shurikens were like your first line of defense. The ninjutsu is kind of your backup. And then like specifically, I think it's pronounced Meijin ninjutsu. The one where you turn into a rock and explode.
Yeah, that's the seppuku ninjutsu pretty much.
Yeah, yeah. That's basically like your emergency intervention. So he really wanted to flesh out the gameplay as much as possible to kind of separate it from what it would be like maybe perhaps playing Shinobi.
I felt that. I feel that.
I mean, I feel like we're giving a lot of our thoughts away. I feel like he was successful on that part. But yeah, I mean, we're talking about like early Genesis games, and Revenge of Shinobi was kind of important to the moderate success that Genesis was having in those early days. You know, I already talked about some of the early titles on the show, and nobody was really wanting to play Altered Beast. I mean, you said you didn't even fucking play it for a while because you were playing this.
I did eventually, but if these two games came out, you know, they were available at the same time, and I mean, this is apples to dog shit.
Yeah,
you know?
And to be fair, I mean, Phantasy Star 2 launched around this time. Nobody actually played that in 1989, but I mean, that was there. So I guess I could hear an argument for like the one person that played that game.
Yeah, fair point.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, Revenge of Shinobi was the Genesis game. This was also, I can't skip this part, right? This is also the first game Yozo Koshiro worked on.
That's massively important. Massively important.
Yes. Yes. I feel like I cannot skip that fact here. And more importantly, I can't skip it because it's probably the only time I'll ever talk about him on the show because I have not played any of the games he's really worked on except for this one. So
interesting.
I realize how influential he is. He's one of the most legendary video game composers out there. I take everybody's word for that. So Revenge of Shinobi was released in Japan and North America in December 1989 for the Mega Drive. and Sega Genesis and hit the PAL territories in March 1990. Since its release, it has been ported to the PlayStation 3, Wii Virtual Console, Steam, Android, and iOS. Now, all of these ports are actually different from the original Genesis release. How did you play this game, by the way?
I have the original 1989 cartridge. So I have the first edition, because there's four cartridge revisions, and then there's other revisions in the future that took place. But I have the first one that's just riddled full of lawsuits. So.
Yeah, companies were not very litigious in the 80s about their IP.
I just think Sega didn't give a shit. I think they were like, fuck it. Let's just if we get in trouble, we'll make a new one.
I mean, there was Nintendo, right?
Right.
Well, technically, they almost got sued by Universal for Donkey Kong, right?
Yes. Well, they did get sued. Won that lawsuit.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. So, I mean, it happened, but it was very rare. I mean, even look at like Contra.
Right.
It has Arnold Schwarzenegger and it has Sylvester Stallone. Like,
clearly,
you look at that box art, and it's like, yeah, this is clear copyright infringement, right?
Yeah.
As for this game in particular, I mean, they put in Rambo, the Terminator, the Hulk, Godzilla, Batman, and Spider-Man. Literally Spider-Man. You go in the manual and it says Spider-Man trademark.
Yeah, well, they had the license for that, which is really weird to me that they were like, you know what, out of all this shit we're putting in the game, let's just make sure Spider-Man is the legality's okay there. Oh, also, they had Mother Brain in it, and I think it was called Mother Brain, which is the boss of the ship level. I don't know if it's actually called Mother Brain, but it looks very fucking close to the Mother Brain on Metroid, the original one on NES.
Why can't I remember what that looks like? I know what you're talking about.
It's the level with the at the end when it has the weird, it's like a super easy boss, but it has the lasers and then they stop and then a brain in a jar comes up out of a machine and you have to shoot it and it goes back in.
Oh, yeah. Okay, now I remember. You know, yeah, I guess I can kind of see the similarities, yeah.
That's just my conspiracy. I'm not saying that's truth, but
it looked more like you were fighting an iron lung or something. Like, I don't know what the fuck that thing was.
But after seeing fucking Batman and Spider-Man, I'm like, oh, there we go. Fucking Mother Brain. I was expecting to see fucking Max Headroom and Michael Jackson pop out at some point.
It doesn't make sense. Like, it doesn't make sense that Spider-Man is in this game. It doesn't make sense any of these things are in this game. But like the Hulk and like Godzilla, I mean, to be honest, yeah, it looks like Godzilla, but also it could just be a generic dinosaur at the same time. Like, these designs are vague enough. But Spider-Man is Spider-Man. Like, that dude is crawling on the walls, coming down on a web, shooting webs at you.
And then it's
Spider-Man.
He turns into Batman.
Yeah.
And it's clearly Batman. Just like the Hulk turns into Terminator. Yeah. And for me, I'm a kid, I'm busting my first nut. I'm like, these are every fucking thing I love in the world right now in 1990 in this one fucking game. And it's the first game I ever played in this generation. I almost had a fucking pleasure stroke. That sounded terrible.
Dude, it is. Yeah, absolutely. Like, all they needed was the fucking Ninja Turtles, He-Man.
I know. I want to see what the drafts were. I wonder if like even if all the enemies were going to be fucking pop culture things from the 80s.
The second boss that you fight in the club should have just been Prince.
That would have been perfect Michael Jackson boss level.
Yeah. There you go.
No, but I think maybe they were trying to, I mean, if you got to think about it, the demographic was you and I. So
right.
They're just feeding us fucking a pure dopamine of like everything is popular in one game. Maybe that attributed to why it was successful. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, eventually all that shit caught up to them, right? I mean, that's why there's so many different revisions of this.
Oh yeah.
Of this game. So
they got a lot of lawsuits. Yeah.
Yeah. So review scores for context, because we are not fucking professionals here. EGM gave it a 34 out of 40. IGN gave it an 8 out of 10. Computer and Video Games gave it 93%. Mean Machines, I doubt they're around still,
My favorite magazine. Percent.
And then, of course, Nintendo Life gave it a 9 out of 10. So, all around, very, very good scores.
That would be, on Metacritic, I think that would probably put it in the 90s, right?
You know, I don't check the Metacritic scores that often anymore, but I would assume so. Yeah, yeah, I mean, these scores also don't include, you know, anything that was Sega-related.
Oh.
Just because, obviously, they're going to give it, like, a 10 out of 10.
Of course, yeah.
So, but as of 3 years ago, roughly, Streets is Watching on Amazon gave Revenge of Shinobi a 5 out of 5, stating, quote, "This was one of my favorite games in the 80s. Some of the bosses in this game included the Terminator, Spider-Man, Batman, and Godzilla. This game had it all," end quote.
I love you emphasize the caps.
Yeah. He's very, hey, we were all excited. We just talked about it.
Absolutely.
Right? This game did have it all.
Hey everyone, this is Chris Copleen from the Retro Hangover Podcast. Right now, we are running a series called The King of Games 1992 that features Keith from the Main Quest Podcast. The show you're listening to right now is one of our guest members. All the big games of 1992, worldwide, clashed to claim superiority of classic gaming and nostalgia. Come over to our show, which you can find on any podcast hosting service of your choice, or go to linktree.com/retrohangover, linktr.ee/retrohangover, and see who takes the crown for the most important game from the year 1992. Let's
slide into the story and plot here. And, you know, I appreciate a game that lets you know what's going on, even if what is happening isn't very important. But I appreciate that this game has some sort of continuity with the first game. You know, without the context of knowing what Shinobi was about, I do know that this game takes place 3 years after the events of the first one. And Zeed, you know, the evil corporation Zeed, may or may not have been in the first one, but they're back. And as Japanese corporations tend to do in the 80s, they reformed as Neo Zeed. Everything's Neo Tokyo, Neo Japan.
Neo Sporin.
Neo. And they want to kill ninjas specifically. For reasons, I guess. So Neo Zeed kills off the master of your tribe, and they also kidnap your wife, which it's been a while since I've had to save a princess on this podcast, and I'm going to count it. Now, my question for you, sir. At the beginning of this game, it says that it takes place in 19XX. So, you brought up Earthbound.
Yes.
Earthbound is in 19XX. And then you got Mega Man, which takes place in 20XX. Are these a shared universe?
Yes. that's an easy yes for me.
I feel like this predates Earthbound, right?
Correct.
And then Earthbound is like in the middle, and then Mega Man would be the future.
That all makes sense. I obviously, if you play the original version of this game, I would put the X somewhere in the 80s, like the 1990 or the 1980. Since it's XX, I would say 85. Where I'd place this.
Mm.
Just based off a brief inventory of its graphical elements and the characters involved.
You know, I don't Man, it's been a long time since I recorded my episode on Mega Man, but I think for the research in that episode, I found out Mega Man took place in like 2010 or something.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. Personally, I don't need the story. I think the game speaks for itself.
I feel like they were competing. I get a little bit of Sega trying to one-up Ninja Gaiden with this game. So I feel like they took some of the cues of Ninja Gaiden and tried to, or Gaiden, however people pronounce it, and they followed that a little bit, like that formula. I'm not saying exactly, but I saw it in there. I feel like they wanted to make a better Ninja Gaiden. And so the story elements of Ninja Gaiden at least their format seems very similar.
It's been a very long time since I played this game. I think the last time I played this was when I was a kid. I've never played Ninja Gaiden, and whenever I was thinking about this game, I always confused it with Ninja Gaiden, and then I would look up Ninja Gaiden, and I'm like, I didn't fucking play that. So I think you might, you know, I think you what you said might actually be true. I think Sega was just kind of stepping on the toes of Ninja Gaiden there.
Yeah, which I think they succeeded. Personally.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So talking about the gameplay here, you know, before we even jump into anything, again, there's the options menu. I love that you can change the difficulty of the game itself and the number of shurikens that
Joe.
By the way, this dude's name is just Joe.
Joe. Well, it's Joe Muashi or Miyashi. I think it's Muashi. But yeah, Joe.
Just Joe. Right.
From the ancient ninja clan. And
Japanese born, raised in the United States, the Bronx specifically.
Yes.
Hey, I'm throwing stars over here.
What's his master's name? Like Carl?
Oh shit! They killed Carl.
You bastards killed Carl.
I was gonna go down to Fifth Street and get a slice with
There's
him.
A lot of people in Brooklyn right now wanting to punch us in the fucking face.
Oh man, you hear that Main Quest podcast episode? He's always just like, oh yeah, I played Revenge of Shinobi over there, eh? Yeah, so anyway, setting the amount of shurikens, man, I just put it to max.
Obviously.
Because you get a limited amount that you can throw, and they don't replenish level to level unless you die, which you will probably die pretty often. You can also pick them up via the random crates that are scattered across the levels, right? But for the most part, they're finite. So yeah, I just maxed the fucking shurikens out because I was there's no way I was going to get through this game without it.
I'm wondering if it's they seem very generous with the drops, but I'm wondering if that was based off the difficulty setting initially.
I would guess so, because there are a lot of those bombs. There's a lot of bombs.
God
that are in the
damn,
crates.
Are there? Fuck me. They look like old timey photographs or cameras.
Yeah, they look like the old Instagram logo from like 2008.
Yeah. Not falling for that again.
Did you, even with the shurikens maxed out, did you get sweaty thinking you're going to run out?
I was kind of shuriken happy though. So yeah, a little bit, but if I were playing it on like the default setting, I would 100% be clinching my asshole the whole game. Especially how important the shurikens are for just straight baseline combat, because you don't have a choice between using your sword or shuriken. You're using your shuriken unless something is close to you, and then you use your sword or your foot. But you only have a finite amount of shuriken, so you have to inventory manage kind of with just basic attacks.
Yeah, I was the same way. I was tossing shurikens all over the place. I mean, to be fair, they do try and gate you through the different types of enemies that they throw at you. So you can't just straight up shoot shurikens at some enemies. You do have to get up close and hit them with your sword or kick them or whatever, which, you know, I appreciated, you know, that a lot of enemies go down with one hit, right? And some of the other ones emphasize that you have to find an opening and attack. And I think that was really cool. Nothing about it felt unfair. It felt like you really had to learn the enemy's movements, and it kind of reminded me of Zelda 2 with the Dark Nuts and stuff, who would always hold up the shield, but then they'd also try and stab you, and so you kind of had to follow their pattern. This wasn't as difficult as Zelda 2, but a lot of it reminded me of that. I don't know if that's something that came up in your mind. I don't know if you, how did you feel about the enemy variety here?
I thought it was great. I felt my only complaint was that some of them were actually hard to see because of some of the background levels. And I was playing on original CRT. So I was trying to play it as like absolutely as fucking original as I could.
Dude, just fucking I noticed hardcore.
No, it's just because I got OCD and shit. You know, it's not because I'm not a historian. I mean, these are just, I own the systems that I grew up with. You know, if you saw my collection, you'd laugh. But I felt that the enemy diversity was great. And I did like the fact that some of them were going to block your shots. You had to get close. And even if you got close, you still kind of like, they do the thing that, like you said, the dark net where they are blocking shots and you have to find an opening, especially with some of the bosses. But I like the variety. But my only problem is some of them are hard to see with the backdrop, especially the projectiles. I'd found myself getting hit and I didn't know where the fuck it came from. I didn't see it coming. But that could have just been me playing it like a fucking hipster, you know? Like, I assume if anybody else is going to play this game, they're not going to play it the way I did. And so I don't know if that's a valid argument. So ultimately, yes, I like the variety of every exploding enemy in the game.
I definitely can see what you mean, especially in, I think it's like there's two levels where you're like, you're on a highway in one of them, and then the other one, you're like going through like a military base or something. Mm-hmm. And you have to actually jump from the foreground and into the background. And so in a lot of cases, there would be those enemies that like throw dynamite at you. But I couldn't tell if they were like throwing that from the background or the foreground. I didn't know where it was coming from. And more often than not, I was absolutely getting obliterated by it. But yeah, I can kind of see what you mean by that. And a lot of those guys with the machine guns and the bullets, some of those bullets were hard to see sometimes too. So yeah, I definitely see what you mean there. I meant to ask you, because we're really going to see who's hardcore now. What difficulty did you choose to play this on?
Easy. because like you, I had not played this since I was a child. And I knew of the, I remembered how hard it was. And I know that I sucked probably more now at it than I did back then. So I started at easy and I was getting my ass kicked.
Yeah, I played this on normal. So yeah, it's to be honest, I didn't even finish this game until like 2 days ago.
Dude, congrats on normal too. That's
fucking tough as shit.
Yeah.
Now I use save states at the beginning of every stage, so I wasn't getting kicked back to the very first level every time I game over or whatever. Right. So there's that caveat also. So what my question was, though, and maybe you know this just through having played this game so many times or just knowing about it, is there a different ending if you play on like any harder difficulties? Because when I finished this game, I felt like I got a bad ending.
The ending actually is decided by the last battle. It's in how quickly you beat the last boss. You get one ending or the other. Cause I don't know if I want to spoil it, but, I'll just say that like, it's almost like a timed battle.
I had no idea. Okay.
Yeah. So I know.
I clearly did not go fast enough then.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but kudos to you. I've never beat the game. I've tried. I almost did as a kid and I couldn't even get halfway there this run through. I was so I kept getting hung up on certain levels. Yeah, man, kudos to you. This is definitely a game to put a notch on your belt for.
They don't signpost that the final boss is timed or anything. There's actually a lot of stuff at the end of the game that they don't fucking signpost.
No, dude.
Now that I think about
it. Yeah, those final couple levels are some of the hardest, I wouldn't say on the Genesis, but maybe in this series.
I do want to put a pin in that because we'll get back to that.
Yeah, no problem.
But just like on the overall basics and the mechanics and stuff, I think it's crazy that the original Shinobi was a one-hit kill for your character. So to kind of side-skirt that whole arcadey thing with that game, they added a life bar to this game, which, just speaking to the difficulty of this game, is it would be insane if it was a one-hit KO.
Unplayable.
Like, this game unplayable. Would be nearly unplayable. Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely.
And like a lot of games of this era, I kept the points-based system, so you do get a score at the end of every level. And the more points you rack up, the more health you actually get dumped into your life bar, and you rack up continues as well. Did you think this game felt great to play? How did you think? How well did you think Joseph moved?
Joseph L. Musashi
or whatever. Yeah.
At the time, I mean, there's two different ways to look at this, right? There's a way to look at it when I first played it, and then the way I looked at it when this last week. And I feel that at the first time I played it, I was really impressed. But as of now, it was one of those games where I'm like, "Ooh, this is stiff. Yikes!" You know. But as I put more and more time into it, it actually kind of felt great. The movement is, and the gameplay is very, it's got a small little learning curve. But then once you figure it out, you're kind of dialed in. So, and I did, with an exception to maybe some parts that require some precision, I thought it was decent. Even, I think it kind of still holds up after these, however, 30 plus years.
Yeah, man, I'm going to agree. And, you know, I'm going to add too, anybody who knows me or has been listening to the show should know one of my favorite NES games is Castlevania. And the way Joseph moves is very similar to the way Simon Belmont moves. It's very, it has that stiff feeling to it. Even straight up copying the knockback, which, listen, I know a lot of people, they don't really like Castlevania just because of the way Simon moves, right? A lot of people have issues with that, but this stage design and everything is very deliberately designed around the way Simon moves, and I very much feel that is the same case here, especially when you get to those later levels, which are very much clearly designed around you mastering the movement of Joe. It's so weird to just fucking Joe. Call him Joe. It's so generic. And I mean, the real reason why those levels are as hard as they are is you just got cheap enemy placement. There's no other way around. There's no denying that the enemy placement is awful in those later levels. But yeah, I think if you're going into this for the first time, just know, just kind of controls like Castlevania. And if you're like, man, I hate that first Castlevania game, you might not like this. This might not be for you. You know, one of the harder aspects to pull off, and this is something the game really emphasizes, like after level two, that you must have this down, is the double jump. Was the double jump something you had an issue with, or was it just kind of like riding a bike
again? I didn't know it existed when I first played the game until I got to like the third level, and I'm like, because it's the double jump itself, or the level, I'm sorry, not the third, but the level that requires the waterfall and all.
Yeah,
that.
That's the second level. Yeah,
I was reminded through my playthrough that the double jump exists from the first screen, but it's a timed kind of thing. Like it's a jump where you have to hit a certain height from your initial jump and then hit the jump button again, and you will perform the double jump, which takes a while to kind of get down, and they throw you right into the flames on that second level. Well, or I guess into the ocean or the river. But I hated it at first. And then, like I said earlier, though, this game's got a little bit of a mechanical or control-wise learning curve. Just a little bit. And it's once you get it down, you've got it, you know? And so it's same thing happened. I was rusty. I was dying 1,000 times. And then I got it down. And then I was okay moving forward.
Yeah, there's what helped me the most was there's like a little sound cue almost that happens when you jump. And I used that to help me nail the double jump. It was like, all right, I'm going to press A or whatever button it is. I'm going to press A. He's going to jump. I'm going to hear this. And then like half a second, not even that, very quickly, then I knew, okay, now I got to tap A. It was very almost rhythmic. And yeah, that second stage, make sure you fucking know that you have to get it down, because the rest of the stage is really, again, they really emphasize that you need to learn that to get through the game. But there are special powers, almost kind of like a beat 'em up. There are special powers that you get. mentioned them before in the development history, the ninjutsu. And so these are basically like one-time use power-ups that you can use in any stage. Sometimes you can collect a bonus power-up from like one of the crates, so you're able to use them twice. And so these power-ups are, and I'm going to butcher all of these, Ikazuchi, which is basically just your invincibility. You can take like 4 or 5 hits before this thing wears off. Otherwise, I mean, you could basically use it indefinitely if you don't get hit. But then if you're not going to get hit, then why would you even need to use it? And then you've got the Kariku. And this is a all clear screen type of joint here. I don't know. Did you use this a lot? Did you find this useful?
I kind of feel like they all had use, but there was like situation specific. This one in particular, not really, because you're kind of, I know this is, like you said, is meant to be used to clear the screen, but you get good enough at this game, you don't really need to use that. I think it's better used for maybe hitting a boss when you're not near them, or for instance that mother brain boss. I think it worked really well for that one. But no, I didn't feel like it was, I didn't use that one often.
Yeah, I had the same thought as you, where I was like, I'm going to save this for a boss. But so the bosses do the thing where the more you damage them, they start to change colors, right? And so I would use this thinking like it's going to be like a super powerful attack. But then the boss didn't really look like they took any damage. So I'm like, well, I don't know how useful this thing is, other than I used it on the maze. Because that entire level, they're just crowding you with fucking enemies and you can't get away from them. So
that makes sense.
It helped there, but like at any other point, like you said, like all of these have good uses if you know when to use them and if you utilize them well. Yeah, that's one I just didn't really use that much either. Now the Fushin, if we're talking about Fushin, it's essentially a moon jump. And so, you know, we talk about the double jump, which you can gain a ton of height with, but Joe can just basically reach heights, the same heights of a double jump in a single leap. And this is something I used a lot. I feel like it really outweighed the rest of the power-ups here. I don't know if you had that same experience.
I feel like it was mandatory to use this power up for to get through some of the more difficult platforming sections in certain stages. You can also bypass a good chunk of some stages with that power up. That is easily the most useful special of the four.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of there's actually a lot of vertical stages, and it's like, yeah, why wouldn't I just use this? Like why wouldn't I? I don't know why I would ever just use the regular jump when I can just, you know, leap up 2 platforms basically in a single jump, maybe even 3 if I'm double jumping too. This is what I use to actually beat the final boss. The final boss is like basically whips his hair around and his whole it's like a wig or something. Like the dude is wearing like a gigantic wig. He just throws it at you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got to be precisely jump at that point too, right?
It's like
a rhythm to it, his hair whipping that goes across the screen.
And it tracks you sometimes too. Like there's a lot of cheap hits. But you have to really have that double jump down. And so I found like that was the most helpful out of all the power-ups with that. You know, I feel like if you're more of a offensive person, you might use the first power-up, the invincibility. But you also have to be really good at just not getting hit. And then this last power-up, which I used once just to see what it did, and I still wasn't sure what it did. I only know because I looked it up. But the Mijin, you basically just kill yourself. And in return, it pretty much kills everything around you. I don't know if it also kills the boss either. I'm not sure.
It's actually vital for certain boss fights. I've noticed through some research, this is used a lot with speedrunning. So
okay, that makes sense.
And it's a lot of people would get a bunch of men ranked up through points, and then like just totally spam this on the last boss at a certain frame to just like annihilate him as fast as possible, because it does major damage on bosses that in their vulnerable points or vulnerable, like I not to say points, but like the frame.
Right.
Yeah. So it's one of the, I think it's just like the advanced Revenge of Shinobi special ability, you know. It's not necessary to beat the game, as you showed.
Is there anything else about the gameplay that you feel like we didn't cover?
No, I think you pretty much nailed it. My summary on it would just be that the pacing of the game is pretty decent, but it kind of trains you along the way and ramps you how like things jump in difficulty, but it tries to kind of ease you into it. So that's really all I got to say about it. I like the pacing, even though it's a very difficult game. It gives you that second level to get you adjusted with the double jump before you're using it later on, you know, example, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's all I got.
Yeah, 100%. I totally agree. And I saw in your notes that you're talking, you're kind of like inching your way forward using the shurikens.
Yeah, later on in the game, because you can't just start running and gunning, right?
Right.
Like you do on the first level, it seems really easy. You're like, oh, okay, I can just fly through this. You start doing that like level 4 or 5, you're going to get your ass kicked. Like, especially, I think the maze level specifically, you kind of just have to like fucking throw shurikens in before they even get onto the screen.
It's a total valid way of getting through a game like this. I think the last time I even talked about doing something like that was like fucking episode 2 or 3 of this podcast when I talked about the legendary axe. Very same situation. Yeah, it's something that I did too.
I think it's fair.
Favorite part of the show might not be your favorite part of the show now that you're in the hot seat.
Oh boy.
This is a game that I would like to call Ben. No relation to Joe. You'll understand the name after I explain the premise of this game.
Okay.
Maybe you might. I'm just assuming things about you. The rules are easy. I have a list of 10 animal sidekicks.
Okay.
All you have to do is tell me who the other half of the duo is. And of course, if you get the answer correct, I gotta give you a shot at a bonus point. And to earn that, all you have to do is tell me the game is that the duo is from, right?
Okay.
And so now you're probably asking, how does this game tie into Revenge of Shinobi? Right?
I am curious.
It's because Shadow Dancer, right?
Oh.
Joe has a wolf companion.
Yeah, right? You had the dog or the wolf, right.
Yeah. Also, the name Ben, the game show Ben, that's a reference to Michael Jackson's animal sidekick, his rat Ben.
Of course. Everybody knows that.
So I thought everybody knows that.
I thought it was for N. Jerry's Ben the Rat. Number one.
Oh, man, it would have been great if Joe's name was just Jerry instead.
Jerry? No last name?
Well, there's like 5 other Shinobi games, right? One of those guys had been named Jerry or something. But yeah, do the rules make sense? Are you good to go?
I'm pretty sure I got it. I'm good to go. Yeah.
Animal 1. Epona.
Link.
Correct. What game is that from?
Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time on Nintendo 64.
Perfect. I was gonna say you have a couple of choices actually. Actually, now that I'm looking at these, there's a couple of choices for most of them. So, all right, cool. 2 points. You're on the board, man. Animal the second, dog meat.
Fallout. God. What? Oh God. What's the vault? Oh fuck. What's his name? Dogmeat was in the second Fallout game and came and returned in the later iteration. The Vault Dweller.
Yeah. Yeah. Or I was just going to. The Wastelander, I would accept also.
Yeah.
Yeah, each of, yeah. And you said Fallout, so yeah, you got it. Animal 3. At least I think it's an animal. Daxter.
Oh, Jack and Daxter.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, Jack is the other guy, so yeah, you got it.
Made famously on the first, their first game that was released on PlayStation 2, I think, in 1998.
Really? Was it that early?
I don't know. Is there a way we can see that up?
Wait, did you say PlayStation 2? I don't think the PlayStation 2 was out in 98.
I think you're right. Probably then post 2000. But I recall, I think their first game was out on the first, or was on PlayStation 2 at least.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I have no
idea. I think most of them were.
I have no idea
at
the time.
Jack 3 was on PlayStation 3.
Nice.
Are you ready for the fourth animal here?
Absolutely.
I was going to say it in a specific way, but it might have given it away. I'll just say Agro.
Agro? How was that spelled?
Agro!
Oh, no. I think you might have got me here. Can I get a pronunciation? Or not a pronunciation. Can I get the first letter? I know it's not in the rules, but...
Oh, A-G-R-O. Or are you talking about of the...
Oh! Oh, is this a horse? Wait, I'm not supposed.
Yes.
I don't know why. I'm just adding rules. Oh God, what is that game? Oh no. Ah. I'm going to tell you right now. I 100% don't know your character's name, but I'm pretty sure that's from Shadow of the Colossus.
Yes.
But I don't know the.
But you got to earn that bonus.
I don't.
Point,
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I do not know the name of your character in Shadow of the Colossus. I. God, I love that game too. Oh no.
Are you giving in?
I'm giving in.
All right. Technically unnamed character, but is just known as the Wanderer.
Okay, that's fair.
These are going to get a little tougher.
I can see.
So that's a goose egg on that one. So number 5, Peck.
Peck. Oh. Why did I want to say Peck? Why my mind immediately went to Banjo-Kazooie? Peck.
That is,
are you the
bird?
Are you the town folk?
What? What?
I'm thinking Animal Crossing. I don't know why. Is it?
Oh.
So there's a character named Peck in Animal Crossing. But I'm wrong with that one then. Damn it. These ramped up.
It is Artie.
Oh.
Is the... From Artie Lightfoot.
Fuck me.
Yes.
Oh, I should have known.
I was going to give you a clue. I'm like, you just listened to
this
episode.
I did. I know. Fucking hell.
All right. Number 6. Roach.
Roach is your horse and you are John Marston and that's Red Dead Redemption 2.
Is that your final answer?
Yes.
Incorrect.
Fuck. Don't tell me it's the first one.
It is Geralt.
Oh,
from The Witcher.
Why did what? Oh, you know what I just did? I named my fucking horse Roach when I played Red Dead. And I played so much of it that I associated that name to that instead of The Witcher. Fuck, man. Wow.
Oh,
I was
man.
So confident.
You really were.
I know.
Yeah, that's what I was like. I gave you a look and I'm like, okay.
You're like, you sure?
Positive. All right. Number 7. Broadhead.
Broadhead? Oh my gosh. There's no way I'm going to. Broadhead. I got to give you a wild answer. Out of what was 60,000 games. Broadhead. Is this from, you said this is Sidekicks?
Yeah. Yeah. Sidekicks, Companions.
Oh my God. Broadhead. I'm going to wildly just say Dark Souls 1. And you're.
No.
But it got that, man.
It is Aloy from Horizon Zero Dawn or Forbidden West.
Oh, to be fair, I haven't played those yet.
Okay. All right. Well, the game doesn't care. what you played.
That's a fair point.
Man, you got a couple goose eggs here. Maybe these last three, you can turn it around here.
Oh my gosh.
Number 8, Poochie.
Bart Simpson?
Technically, you're not wrong.
He was kind of the hip sidekick, right?
You know, if there was a video game that had Poochie in it, I would give it to you. But that's not what I'm looking for.
Okay. Well, that's the first thing that came to me, other than like the robot you can buy in real life. Poochie. Oh, man. Well, it's a dog and it's a sidekick. Oh, my gosh. I'm just downhill. I think I have a random answer. I'm going to say Bart Simpson. I'm sorry. I can't even think of it. I'm so derailed on it. It might be another game I haven't played.
I don't know, man. It is the sidekick. The other sidekick to the sidekick I'm looking for is Yoshi.
Yoshi?
What? From Yoshi's Island.
What? Oh, man. I've actually never played Yoshi's Island.
What?
Yeah.
Crazy. I know. Well, you guys got to cover that game.
There are so many games that are like those. I can't believe you never played them. Like Chrono Trigger. I've never played that.
Fair. Yeah. Fair. I didn't play Chrono Trigger until like a couple years ago. Number 9. Cerberus.
Oh, well. Cloud from Final Fantasy VII.
Is that your final answer?
Oh, why are you going to say that? Cerberus.
I'm trying to give you chances.
Cerberus.
Here.
Oh, it's not Dante's Inferno. Oh,
I'll give you a clue. It is a game that I briefly mentioned earlier.
Mm.
That probably doesn't help because we've been talking for like an hour now.
Yeah. We just talked about like 20 games in 10 minutes. Cerberus. I know what it is. Ah, it's on the tip of my tongue. I all these things are going through my head right now. I've got Metal Gear Solid going through my head. I've got like Devil May Cry. I've got God of War.
It is kind of a vague name.
Yeah. Well, it's used,
but that's why it's number 9.
It's used in all those. Oh, damn it. And it's a side character. It's a sidekick. Ah! Cerberus. Come on. Where is it? I could have swore that was your dog companion in Final Fantasy. But apparently that's not it, so.
It is a dog. Well, obviously it's a dog's fucking Cerberus. Stupid. Calling myself stupid, sorry.
No, you're fine. Oh, is it Hades?
Who's the character?
You're the son of Hades. God damn it. What's his name? Fuck. I'm just playing this game right now on the Steam Deck. Ah! Can't think of his name. Aloysius or whatever? What the fuck's his name? I can't think of his name. Damn it. I wish I could at least get the point for figuring out what it... Because, yeah, now that's the Cerberus, the most recent Cerberus. Damn it.
Aloysius. Yeah. You know what? I'll give you a point. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it like
that, yeah, you really pulled that one out. Aloysius, though, definitely needs... If Supergiant is listening to this, which I know they are, definitely going to have a character named Aloysius in Hades.
I don't know why. I'm sure that's a Shakespeare character for some weird memory I have in theater.
Zagreus is the character.
Zagreus! Oh, God. Yeah, I just started playing that. And I know he's all cute and you can pet him and stuff.
Right, yeah. Number 10. Now, this is archaic. Moo Moo. Mm-hmm. Here's your hint. Previous episode of my podcast.
Oh, fuck.
I don't know if that's going to help you at all. Probably not.
I'm just thinking of Doc McStuffins for some reason. I didn't listen to the last one yet. I just listened to Artie Lightfoot. Did I listen to the last one? I don't want to.
It's an older episode.
Oh, it's an older episode. Okay.
From like 2 years ago.
Moo Moo. I mean, there's a lot. I'm pretty sure Doc McStuffins doesn't work. I know Moo Moo is in the Mario universe. There's that like Mario Kart level. No. I don't know. Mario Kart. It's not a sidekick, though. God damn it.
No.
I'm sorry, man. I've got to... even with the...
It's tough when you're put on the spot. It's happened to me, too, on other shows.
Well, just Moomoo's not ringing any bells other than the stuff I had to watch with my children. So, I have to...
Coco Melon.
Oh, man. So, I've got a bow on this one.
All right. It is Zonk from Air Zonk.
Oh, man. God damn. How would I ever get that? TurboGrafx 16?
Yeah, that's a deep cut.
That's a deep cut, dude. Yeah.
Yeah. Moomoo is the cow.
Imagine I just got that immediately after all the other ones. I'm like, Air Zonk, duh. You're Zonk. You're flying through the air.
Who hasn't played that game?
I have played it because it was on the TurboGrafx 16 Mini, which is a great mini console if people don't know it exists, but it's one of the best.
Well, I mean, now that they know it exists, they're not going to want to drop $400 for one.
It's $400 now?
Yeah, it's crazy stupid expensive now.
Wow.
So out of 10 questions you had...
Oh, gosh. Well,
10 sidekicks. 2, 4, 6, 7 out of 10.
Oh, really?
So you know what? All said, not too bad.
I thought I did a lot worse than that. Yeah, I'm happy with that. I think... Some of those games, there was just no way I'm going to guess games I haven't played or barely know about. But it's a game show. What can you do? People can't use that excuse in Jeopardy, you know?
Well, this game show has been Ben. Let's talk about these graphics and the music here and get the hell out of here. I'm going to kick the graphics off with you. How do you think this game looked?
I absolutely enjoy the look of this game. I said this earlier. It captures the 80s ninja movie feel of its time. Immediately from the first screen all the way through. The backgrounds, it's a silly game too. Like you go from a ninja village to... like rooftops to a disco club to waterfalls to a freeway to a junkyard to a literal airplane warship, and it's all like all the graphic assets are completely different. And even though it's blocky and kind of shows its age, super impressive for this time period, 1989, which means it was developed probably more around 87, maybe late 87, and then all through 88. So this had to have been the graphical standard for I don't know, a couple months before, you know, Super Nintendo came out. But if you compare the looks of this game to, say, like Super Mario World, I think it looks a little better, even though they're different types of games, and you know. But graphically, it's really impressive.
So have you heard of the game? This is kind of a sidebar here. Have you heard of the game Cyber Shadow?
Kind of rings a bell.
It's an indie game. I believe it was made by the same people that made Shovel Knight.
Okay.
Very much inspired by the Shinobi franchise and Ninja Gaiden. Obviously, Control's more like a modern game, right? And I think if Revenge of Shinobi came out today and controlled like Cyber Shadow, something like Cyber Shadow, and graphically, like you would not be able to tell the difference. Honestly, I think this holds up better than a lot of games of its era, especially... I mean, talking about Golden Axe and Altered Beast, I think what this game really excels at is because in general, like Genesis games were a lot darker than a lot of the games out on the market. I mean, of course, you had stuff like Ristar and Sonic and stuff, which are kind of on the side there. They're very much different graphically. Use a lot of brighter colors, whatever. But for the most part, a lot of Genesis games are a lot darker. And I feel like because, like you said, this is kind of like a ninja almost like an 80s ninja movie. The darkness of the graphics really suit the game and its atmosphere. It feels like a gritty, like you said, gritty ninja 80s movie. I think it's really fucking cool.
It also, the levels, I should have brought this up when I was praising it. Their use of parallax scrolling in the background and foreground is fantastic. There's like three different layers in some levels of background that are all moving at different speeds, but give you that gives you a dimension. And it's impressive. Like I said before, this had to have set the bar for its time.
Yeah. I mean, there's those, I mentioned one of the stages, like there's a highway and you're jumping from the foreground to the background, but then also there's another background. There's another layer of the highway of the cars moving around too. And there's all these sprites on screen. One of the things I didn't really notice was any slowdown.
No, that's true. I didn't even consider that.
So that's also just on a technical aspect. Like, this game is just going full fucking steam, like not even looking back here. And it's the other thing I wanted to talk about is just some of the ambient changes on some of the levels. Like that first level right away, you're going through it and it's like a sunset, and then it slowly starts to turn. The sun starts to set and it's nighttime by the time you get to the end of the stage, which is something a lot of games back then just were not doing. And I think that was really cool. Not a lot of this stuff was being seen on. We just talked about the TurboGrafx-16. PC Engine was out at the time. They were kind of doing stuff like this, and you could probably argue that they were kind of doing it better. But I think this game is a great exception, especially considering the other stuff that was coming out on the Genesis at the time. I really do think this game is doing a lot of cool stuff graphically. And the other dumb thing that I love that this fucking game does is that everything explodes. Everything you hit, everything you kill explodes, including the dogs.
Yeah, right out the gate, too. And then later on, you get exploding nuns who are ninjas. It's just hard to explain to people this game without it sounding like a ridiculous 80s ninja movie. But
Yeah, man.
I agree.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that I stand behind my statement of this was Sega flexing on Nintendo.
One of the things you brought up earlier in your personal history was like when you're talking about how like, holy shit, like, I can't believe how good this game looks. Like, nothing's ever going to look better than this. Like, the future is now.
Yeah.
Right.
Blast processing.
Yes. And that's exactly how I felt, too. You go from an NES and then you go to playing something like this, and it's completely different. And like I said, I feel like if this came out today, and then, you know, taking away what it feels like to play this game, you wouldn't even know if it came out in 1989 or if it came out in 2023.
Correct. And it also came out, like, it was also interesting is how many times it came out over the next following 4 years. But they didn't change a lot of the graphical, or they didn't really change much of the graphics or sprites other than just the legal things they had to do. They left everything else intact, which kind of shows you that they got it right the first time.
I think we both agree that the graphics either way definitely hold up. But does the soundtrack hold up? And I mean, it's fucking Yozo Koshiro. Like, of course it fucking holds up. I thought the soundtrack is phenomenal. You know, and a hot take here, I don't know if you've listened to any of my other Genesis episodes where I shit on the Genesis sound chip. I do not like the Genesis sound chip. I think he is as famous as he is because he is simply the only person that knows how to make a good soundtrack on the Genesis. And it's his first one, too. Like, this was his first try, and he fucking knocked it out of the park. It didn't sound like every other horrible soundtrack on the Genesis.
No, I agree with you. The Genesis, to me, I never understood this argument that the Genesis had better sound and the Super Nintendo had better graphics, when I feel like it was the opposite. I'm not sure if that's your average argument, but I've heard it many times on other shows. The Genesis has always sounded crunchy to me. There's this crunch factor and this blah, blah kind of area of, I don't know what decibels do that, but it's Revenge of Shinobi and Yuzo Koshiro, like, it's his first outing. It's a masterpiece of a soundtrack. I consider it one of the best composed soundtracks on the original Model 1, because I'm sure you're familiar that the different Genesises had different sound chips, and the first iteration Model 1 had the best. But it's, and he went on to do the Streets of Rage series, which is some people consider the greatest soundtrack on the Sega Genesis or Master System. Mega Drive. You could listen to the soundtrack. I would highly recommend, if you haven't heard it, just playing it on the background. It vibes, man. It's so well done. And I'm perhaps because it was his first run at making a soundtrack for a game, he put his heart and soul into it. I feel he did. It's fantastic. And then you see what he does later and you're like, God damn, this guy is just, he's the man.
From what I hear, after Streets of Rage 2, he kind of had a period where he was kind of doing some different stuff that doesn't quite hold up as well.
Yeah.
But eventually he got back into the swing of things. He's done so many fucking soundtracks.
Yeah.
You know, not enough time to even name all of them. He is, speaking of Yacht Club Games and, you know, Cyber Shadow and Shovel Knight, he's doing the soundtrack for Mina the Howler, which is the next Yacht Club Games to come out.
It's incredible they got such a talent on their team.
Hell yeah, dude. How did that even happen? I'm sure, I mean, Shovel Knight is a huge fucking success, so I'm sure it wasn't that hard.
I think Shovel Knight was probably the reason.
I do have one complaint, though, about, it's more not with the soundtrack, but more of a gripe with the sound design and the sound effects. And it isn't anything I haven't talked about on the show before, but this game has an issue with the sound chip prioritizing some sound effects over others. And I mentioned the double jump and how I had kind of like a sound effect cue for when I should tap A again to perform the double jump. And in a lot of the later stages, that cue was not there anymore because there were just too many enemies on the screen performing actions that all had specific sound effects to them that the game just decided, well, we don't need the sound for the double jump anymore, so we're going to prioritize this gun sound over that. And so that was just completely lost. And so I was kind of like when Chong Li and Bloodsport threw sand in Jean-Claude Van Damme's eyes, or I'm like double jumping blind almost. And like, I really had to get it. Like, that was the other factor that made the game so difficult in the end for me, was because I just simply did not have that sound cue anymore.
What a goddamn great analogy. I am a man who appreciates a Bloodsport analogy, so thank you. I don't know if this is specific to the way you played it, because I didn't have that problem. Then again, I haven't got that far. I didn't get as far as you did on the way I'm playing it. And I know that the sound chips, like I stated earlier, they started cheapening them as they released the Model 2 and the Model 3 Sega Genesis, to where people were clearly could see that there was a massive difference. And I'm wondering if that's one of those things. I'm not sure, but now I want to look into it, because I'm wondering if, like,
so I'm playing on the Sega Genesis Mini.
Okay.
The first one. I guess since we're talking about revisions, they technically released two of those. But yeah, the first one that came out in like 2018, 2019, somewhere around there.
I'm just going to go with that's just the way it is then. But I want to look it up now. I think I'll just put in a Game Genie code and go to that level, and I'll let you know later on if I'm having that problem. But because I didn't have that problem anywhere else in the game.
Yeah, it was like after somewhere probably like around level 7, where you're doing a ton of platforming.
Yeah.
And you're like in like the ocean or something like that, and there's just tons of like turrets and dudes with guns, and they're throwing grenades and shit, tons of stuff going on, and you have to double jump. You have to double jump for those platforms, and it wasn't there. And it was absent up until like the final boss, because there's not a whole lot going on in the final boss area. So
interesting.
Those last couple of levels were fucking hell for me.
That level 7, I know, has a famously ridiculously hard jump.
Yeah, I posted it in your Discord.
Yeah, you shared with us, and I was like, oh god, I just unlocked like a childhood trauma. I was like, no,
even with the ninjutsu, man, even with the, I don't remember the name of the jump, the power, the jumping power up, but even with that on, it's still a very difficult jump to make.
Yeah, that's why I think it's mandatory for some parts of the game.
Anything else on the music before we wrap this up?
No, music's great. I don't really have any. There's some things are tinny. There's some sound effects. I'm not a big fan of tinny sound effects. But other than that, there's nothing else I can knock about the audio.
Summarize our thoughts and find out if this game is worth playing today. So we'll start with you, if that's okay, if you're ready.
Absolutely.
B-Ross, would you recommend playing Revenge of Shinobi in 2023?
I not only recommend playing Revenge of Shinobi, I recommend you actually purchasing the 1989 cartridge, because it's not very expensive. And even if you don't have a Genesis, you're holding kind of a piece of history, because it has all of those IPs and there were so many lawsuits around it. You can get it for like anywhere from like 10 to 25 bucks.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah. Like I bought my copy for about 20 bucks off of eBay. And I think it's worth having because it's just one of those funny things that like there was so much drama behind it. But outside of that, outside of the collecting side, it's one of those games. It's a classic. It's honestly one of the best games on the Genesis. It represents that era perfectly. It's brilliantly scored. It is the team behind it went on to do bigger and better and greater things. It created one of the best games or one of the best sequels on the Genesis, which was Shinobi 3, which some people consider one of the top five best games on the Genesis. Absolutely worth a play. And it might be hard, but it's very accessible. When I picked it up and started playing it again, I was having a good time. And I like that if it was too hard, I could scale the difficulty one way or another, even if I'm playing it on the original thing and I don't have save state access, which is fine if you use that. But I still found it extremely accessible. And it is worth your time. And I would even say if you never played it or know about it, then I would consider it a hidden gem for people. But I can't say that about the Genesis history, because it's one of the best-selling games.
Giving it gem status.
I'm giving it gem status. Yeah, if this is my show, it gets hidden gem status. That's all I got to say about Revenge of Shinobi. The 1989 one. You got to play the weird one. You can't. It's just the weird charm.
I'm still shocked at how cheap the cartridge is, knowing that there's so much copyright infringement on those original cartridges.
Well, you know, after this episode,
those things would be more expensive.
After this episode comes out, you're going to probably see it jump up to $6,000 a copy, dude.
Yeah, man, I do have that effect. I do have the same pull as Metal Jesus, so watch out.
But yeah, pick it up. It's one of those cheap games that's not only got a weird backstory, but it's worth owning.
My short answer is yes. You should absolutely check out Revenge of Shinobi. Long answer is, I haven't covered a lot of like must-play Genesis games. At least I don't think I have. I know there are a lot of people that would probably say that I have, and that I just did not recommend those games. And hey, sometimes it's all right to be wrong. there's a lot of people I would wager don't know, at least people that listen to my show don't know what it was like playing the Genesis before Sonic the Hedgehog. And we've kind of talked about it a little bit in the show, but it wasn't great. It wasn't great. Like Golden Axe was there. Sure, Altered Beast, whatever. Revenge of Shinobi was like the promise of what was to come on the Genesis. And stuff after this, but before Sonic, I guess I would say up until Sonic 3, actually, but that's neither here nor there. I don't want to keep shitting on Sonic anymore. The games on the console around the time of Revenge of Shinobi just weren't that great. And I said it in my personal history. I'll say it again here. I still feel like this was the Genesis game to play for a while. It was that game that felt like, yes, finally, the new console generation is here. Fuck Nintendo. These games look like crap. this is what Genesis games are going to be. This is what they're going to look like. The graphics are incredible. The controls are familiar. The items and special powers are really cool. They look great. And the soundtrack fucks the mother. I think the game still very much holds up today. And as for my show, is a rare Genesis game that I'm going to recommend here. So yes, everybody should go and check out Revenge of Shinobi. All that's left for me here to do is thank my awesome fucking guest, B-Ross. Thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it. I was really excited to talk to you about this.
Oh, this is all my pleasure, man. I'm a fan of your show, and I appreciate you giving me this chance to nerd out on a game. I think it's great that this pretty much gets the same opinion from us both, and we didn't really let on how we felt. No. Yeah, so that's a statement to the game, and I had a wonderful time, and thank you for the little game show in the middle. That was fun.
Everybody gets one. Yeah, the spotlight is yours, dude. Let everybody know where they can find you and the stuff you do on the internet.
Oh, thank you very much, Keith. So my show is called Super Garbage Day. It is a retro video game review show. Every week we review a random game chosen that neither of us have played, me and my co-host, Mr. Miller. You can find us practically everywhere. We're on Spotify. We're on Apple. We're on Podchaser. We're on a lot of directories. So just look up Super Garbage Day. You'll see this little, it's like a little me figure. Looks like Mario, the cover of Nintendo Power. It's a great artwork. Shout out to Royce Bonuelos, my artist. He just always kills it. And come in for a spell, and I think you'll like it. We have a lot of fun making that show. It's there's a lot of comedy involved, but you know, it's in the same realm as the main podcast where we just do, you know, kind of deep dives on retro games, and we'd love to have you there. And I thank you very much for having me on the main quest. It's great. I can't wait to listen to it.
No problem, man. Hey, you're welcome back anytime. Like, this is a great time. And even if Mr. Miller wants to come on, man, we'll fuck it up.
Oh, I'd love that.
Speaking of your artwork, it's always, I always want to say Super Garbage Day Bros just because of your artwork.
It was almost called that. You know that? It was this close to being called that, but our Super Garbage World. But Super Garbage Day, that's what Mr. Miller liked as well. We just left it the way it is. And hopefully in the future, maybe we'll make some other sideshow, Super Garbage Brothers or something. But.
And also that the Backlog Eternal artwork is fucking killer, too.
Thank you. That's the same artist. Yeah, that's our Patreon show. We have a Patreon only show that is me just going through my backlog of games since I got my Steam Deck. And once I complete them, I'll review them on there. And so... yeah, that artwork, RoyceBonuelos.com. I can't spell it for you right now, but he's great at that kind of artwork, so can't thank him enough.
As for me, what I'm up to, or what I will be up to, is nothing. It's summer vacation for me coming up, so I'll be taking the next 2 months off or so just to relax, not edit podcasts, or scrounge for things to post on social media to maintain relevance. So I guess in fact I will be doing the opposite and not being relevant at all. No new episodes coming up for you guys, unfortunately, but I'm not completely going away. Well, I might be away on this main feed here. There is stuff, plenty of beautiful content for you over there on the Patreon. You will know where to find that. I talked about it at the top of the show, and the links are in the description, as well as all the links for B-Ross and the Super Garbage Day stuff as well. So find all that stuff in the show notes. So with that, I hope everybody has a fantastic summer. I hope to see you guys on the other feed. So take care of yourselves, and always remember, it's okay to like a video game.
On the Main Quest podcast.